The opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. And now, here again is Kirby Anderson.
We're talking about some of the testimony today by James Comey, FBI director, but we want to change topics, and we'll come back to some other topics in the second hour, including the shootings of a number of individuals in Baton Rouge and in Minnesota. But we now bring to the microphone, as I mentioned before, Dr. John Lott. He's been on the program with us many times before. He's been a professor at the University of Chicago, Yale University, Stanford University, Wharton School, a Fox News contributor, as well as an individual that holds a PhD in economics from UCLA. You have perhaps seen some of his other books, More Guns, Less Crime, The Bias Against Guns, and a book that's coming out shortly called War on Guns, and we'll be talking about that with him when it comes out. He is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. Dr. John Lott, thank you once again for joining us here on Point of View.
No, it's great to talk to you again.
Let's, if we can, one of the articles I've posted came out just a few days ago by you, Why Terrorists Target Gun-Free Zones. Before we talk about terrorists, let's remind our listeners that in past interviews we've done with you, you've pointed out that when you've looked at some of these shooters, just these domestic individuals, not terrorists, but just individuals that are obviously mentally unbalanced, they're not totally unbalanced, because when you look, for example, at the killer James Holmes in Aurora, Colorado, he bypassed all sorts of movie theaters where you could carry and instead went to a movie theater which did not allow individuals to have concealed handguns. You've talked about in Charleston, South Carolina, where some of our listeners are, that the shooter Dylan Roof originally was going to go to the College of Charleston, then realized, well, no, they've got armed guards, so instead went to a church. We can see a pattern here, can't we? Whether we look at shooters in this country or terrorists, almost always they seem to be going to a gun-free zone.
Right. Well, it's just not in this country. It's worldwide. These people want to kill as many people as they can. They know that the faster somebody can arrive on the scene with the gun, the faster they're going to be stopped and the fewer casualties that they're going to be. So they do what anybody would do to try to make their job more successful and easier, and that is they choose carefully where to go. And in this case, they're choosing targets where they know victims can't defend themselves. Since 1950, with just three exceptions, all the mass public shootings in the United States have taken place where general citizens aren't allowed to go and defend themselves. And you've mentioned just a few cases. There was a case just a couple months ago in Detroit where a father was concerned that his son was getting involved with ISIS, contacted the FBI. The FBI put a tap on his phone, and they have a very chilling recording of him talking about planning an attack on one of the largest churches in the Detroit area. And he gave two reasons for why he had picked them. He had cased the church. He knew that they regularly had a very large attendance. And he also had discovered that the church explicitly banned its parishioners and others from being able to carry permanent concealed handguns on church property. And so he goes through a discussion about how that will make it easier for him to kill a large number of people there, because nobody will be able to stop him, and it will be a while before the police are able to arrive on the scene.
Wow, incredible. Let's look at the worst and the largest mass public shooting in U.S. history. That's in Orlando, and of course, 50 dead, but even preceding that was Christina Grimey, who was murdered at a concert. Were both of those gun-free zones?
Yeah, right. 49 people were killed there. Florida is one of 10 states that bans permanent concealed handguns where more than 50% of the revenue is obtained from alcohol. There are 40 states that allow it. But, this person, this killer, had been to this nightclub many times. He knew the layout. He knew that there was one guard at the door who was armed, and he quickly exchanged shots with the person. One of the things that's not appreciated is how incredibly difficult of a job guards or police have in stopping these types of mass public shootings. This basically an incredibly dangerous job for them to have, and that is when you have somebody in uniform or somebody who's clearly serving as a guard at a place, they're going to be the first targets.
Yes.
The Charlie Hebdo attack last January in Paris, the first person killed was the guard in front of the building that was there. You know, after the Charlie Hebdo attack, the president of France ordered 10,000 military troops to be put on the streets of Paris in order to try to guard possible targets. It's just not serious. I mean, whether you put 100,000 or 150,000 rather than just 10,000, it still wouldn't have worked. I mean, first of all, not everybody's working 24 hours a day. But the thing is, there's so many possible targets, as was proved later in the year. I mean, there were three other mass public shootings in France last year. And, you know, in the attack in November, it was simply impossible for the troops that were there to go and cover all the targets. So after the attack in November where 130 people were killed, the president of France put another 1,000 troops on the street. I mean, it's just the bizarre thing. The vast majority of people were killed at the one concert hall in Paris. There were 8 off-duty police officers who were in attendance at that concert hall. But since France has not allowed off-duty police officers to carry their guns with them,
yes,
all of them were disarmed. All of them were as defenseless as the citizens were there. I mean, it's just coincidence that you had that many off-duty police officers there at the event. But, you know, the fact that they refused to even let off-duty police officers carry, which would seem to me to be a no-brainer, just kind of shows kind of the warped way that they have about viewing these things.
Let me just mention that if you're interested in more information, we always, of course, have links to the various websites. And first of all, we have a link to John Lott's website, a Crime Prevention Research Center, which is just crimeresearch.org. We have that link there as well. Posted this particular article, Terrorist Target Gun-Free Zones. And, of course, as you well know, if you get my commentary on a regular basis, I do quote from John Lott. And one of those quotes had to do with some research that you and Bill Landis did a while back in which you looked at all sorts of mass public shootings and you tried to see the impact of gun control laws. None of them had any kind of impact. The only thing that you found had any statistical significance was when you had a law that provided right to carry. And in your new article here, you even looked at 13 different types of gun control laws. Again, explain that, because right now we're being told that we need no-fly zone, no-fly list to prevent people from getting guns. We need more gun control. But you looked at this in a statistical way to say there really only is one thing that seems to be effective in trying to at least reduce or even prevent some of these mass shootings. What is that?
Well, it's the passage of these right to carry laws. I mean, we have these laws now in all 50 states, but obviously that wasn't the case. The problem is that you have these gun-free zones that we've been talking about. So to the extent to which the attacks still occur in these states, they overwhelmingly, they virtually always take place in these tiny areas within the state where permanent concealed handguns aren't allowed. And as we've talked about, this isn't by accident. I mean, it's just not, you know, Aurora, Colorado, where there were 7 movie theaters, only one banned permanent concealed handguns. The guy went to the only one that banned permanent concealed handguns. The Lafayette movie theater shooting last year was exactly the same. You know, you have many of these cases, as you mentioned, where these killers explicitly talk about choosing a venue where they know people aren't going to be able to go and defend themselves. And it's just, you know, that's where they take place, in those tiny areas, even within the right to carry states. But the interesting thing is that when you see certain venues no longer become gun-free zones, then you stop seeing attacks in those venues.
Let's take a break. When we come back, if you'd like to join our conversation, we'll keep John Lott on for just a few more minutes. And certainly some of you might have some comments about gun control or about right to carry. I have posted some articles, and of course, I might even point you to some of the commentaries I've written. You could type in gun-free zones. You'll find my commentary, for example, came out a couple of months ago. We have this article, Why Terrorists Target Gun-Free Zones. It was written by John Lott and appeared in the New York Post. And, of course, you can find all sorts of articles by him in his Crime Prevention Research Center website. And I might just mention that when his book comes out, War on Guns, we will certainly spend some time talking about that as well. But if you'd like to join our conversation, we'll stay on the topic of guns a little bit longer. 1-800-351-1212. What's your thoughts about gun-free zones? We'll take your calls right after this.
Now, back to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Talking about Second Amendment, gun control, and all sorts of issues related to it. If you'd like to join us, we'll have Dr. John Lott on for just a little bit longer, and you can join us 1-800-351-1212. We'll get to some of those calls in just a minute. But, John Lott, let me, if I can, maybe steal from what I think is probably going to be in your book, War on Guns, because you and I've talked about this before, and that is, if we really want to do something that would be effective, it seems to me that we need to fix the national instant criminal background check system. And we've already had people saying, well, what about the no-fly list? Well, again, I know individuals that have been put on that list erroneously, but you have pointed out that the current system we have right now falsely flags a lot of law-abiding citizens. And we're going to hear a lot about this during the campaign because Hillary Clinton, on more than one occasion, I've heard her say it, and I know you have as well, that the Brady Act prohibited more than 2 million people from purchasing a gun. But weren't those just initial denials because an individual might have the same kind of name as somebody else?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, it's just a completely false statement on Hillary Clinton's part. You know, and the best analogy I can give you, again, is just to look at something like the late Senator Ted Kennedy, where there were 5 times where he was prevented from flying on a plane because his name was, a similar name was on the no-fly list. But I assume Hillary Clinton wouldn't count that as 5 times they stopped a terrorist from flying.
I don't think so. Yeah.
That's exactly the way they are counting them when they're talking about these guns being stop from being sold for dangerous and prohibited people. You know, it's one thing to stop a felon from buying a gun. It's another thing to stop somebody who simply has a name similar to a felon from buying a gun. And you know, we don't know the exact number because the government won't release the numbers. And the last annual report that was put out was in 2010. The Obama administration has stopped putting out these reports, but what we can determine is that the number of false positives is something around 99%. I think it's above that.
Wow.
You know, I think it's, well, you know, it could be like 99.9 or something like that, but it's a very high percent. So virtually all the 2.4 million people who have been stopped from buying a gun because of background checks have been stopped for the wrong reasons. They've stopped the wrong people. And you know, there are many problems with that, but just one problem is some small but significant portion of those 2.4 million people may have really needed a gun for self-defense. The other thing is that it's basically racist.
Yes.
Because people tend to have names similar to others in their racial group. Hispanics tend to have names similar to other Hispanics. 40% of Vietnamese in this country have the same last name. Blacks tend to have names similar to other blacks, you know, Jamal or whatever. And when you have it so that 30% or so of black males in the United States are legally forbidden from owning guns because of a criminal record, what you end up having is that who do they stop? Well, they're more most likely to create these false positives for law-abiding black males who go and try to buy the gun legally. And And the problem is the Obama administration's made this even worse, because at least under past administrations, they would eventually check to see who was falsely denied and fix it. Now the Obama administration has pulled off everyone who was doing the double checking there to see whether mistakes were made or not. And they're essentially forcing people to go and appeal. And, you know, while it's theoretically possible for somebody to do it without a lawyer, you're unlikely to be very successful in navigating all the forms and what have you. And you're talking about people having to spend thousands of dollars to go and get these things fixed. And basically poor minorities are the ones who are going to be prevented from buying guns because of this.
Yes. Let's take a phone call. I want to get into another aspect of what needs to change in the national instant criminal background check system. But we'll go to California. KYCC, Chris, what would you like to add to our conversation today?
Well, I just find it very interesting that now it's not, you know, the Democrats are not calling them assault rifles. Now they're weapons of war. And it's very interesting that I heard four people use that after the shooting in
yes. Yeah, I'm sure
Florida.
That's focus-tested. I'm sure it's a focus-tested phrase that they thought might work better. Go ahead.
And then also, we just had a Jerry Brown here in California signed a bunch of laws that are supposed to take effect, if they pass. But it's interesting how they did it on the Saturday before the 4th of July, when nobody's really paying attention. You know, the agenda isn't really gun control. It's not about what type of gun. When you have a government in place right now that wants to be more of a dictatorship, they want all the guns. Doesn't matter what kind they are, they're going to try to get them. It's exactly what happened with Hitler in Germany.
Sure. Or, of course, we've been hearing a lot about Australia lately, haven't we, John Lott? As a matter of fact, Matt Damon the other day said, I wish we could do in the United States what you did in Australia. Well, that wasn't voluntary. That, as far as I could tell, was pretty mandatory in terms of gun confiscation.
Right. There are a lot of points being brought up here. I just want to comment on the California stuff first
sure.
that the caller brought up. And the thing, one of the laws that was just signed into law by Governor Brown makes it so that anybody with a misdemeanor, even a nonviolent misdemeanor, is now legally forbidden for life from being able to go and own a gun.
Wow.
And there are also these problems with the background checks. Now, they are going to require background checks as well as a registration for anybody who goes and buys ammunition. The thing is, these things aren't costless. It's just not the types of mistakes that we've been going through. But, you have to charge something for this. This takes time. In some place like Washington, D.C., it costs $125 to go and do
Yeah, and again, until we make that available for everyone, what we are doing is discriminating sometimes against people in racial minorities that have the same last name, also discriminate against people that are poor because it's much more expensive to buy a gun in the District of Columbia where you've added $125 to something that is already maybe financially out of your reach.
Right, and so the very people that my research indicates benefit the most from being able to go and protect themselves, they're the ones who are priced out of being able to defend themselves.
Sure. Well, I know your book, A War on Guns, is coming out, so as soon as it comes out, we'd love to have you back on Point of View and give you as long as you'd like to deal with all the specific elements in that book. So thank you.